south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's start out with a boots on the ground story. No, not a boobs on the ground story, though that happens. Gravity can be a, well, you know what it can be. Anyway, let's start with a controversial boots-on-the-ground story, one that will warm the cockles of your heart. Did mine. By the way, what are those cockles that are supposed to be in your heart, people always talk about? Somehow I don't recall reading about them in my anatomy and physiology book. Oh well, anyway, the other day I was driving around in a big Latin American city, and wouldn't you know it, dead ahead, a cop stop, a roadblock. Then suddenly you have to make a decision, decide what lane to get in to try to lower the odds of getting picked out of the crowd yourself. Though sometimes they'll set up those orange cone pylons so you have to go through a maze and no one can sweep around different lanes to get out of it. Everyone has to go in single file past them. Now, I know, you've heard me say many times there are ways you can get out of it, especially gringos. Off the gringo tourist trail, that is. There are methods that work like a charm, but on the gringo tourist trail, cops know a bit of English and they use Google Translate. They love to nail gringos because we'll pay up. In fact, in a place like Costa Rica, cops will purposely go after rental cars. They can spot them a mile away because they know gringos are renting them and they'll pay up. Oftentimes, rental cars are the only ones they stop. Why antagonize the locals? Anyway, when you're on the gringo tourist trail, there are ways for gringos and expats to get off easy with transit cops at roadblocks. The easiest and most reliable of which is just to play dumb. No hablo español. And if you're off the gringo tourist trail, that works almost every time because the cops stopping you won't know English. They won't even know how to read the pertinent data on your driver's license, which is why I know so many gringos that are still driving around on their expired U.S. licenses, expired sometimes for 2 or 3 years. By the way, you probably know this already, but in order to get a driver's license in any Latin American country, you have to be a permanent resident. Though, many years ago when I first got down here, it wasn't like that at all. You could pay $100, sign up for a driver's ed course, and they'd guarantee you a driver's license at the end of it. And you wonder, how could that happen? Especially for gringos who didn't speak a lick of Spanish, yet they'd get that license. Well, that was because most driver's ed schools in whatever Latin country were owned by a connected government official or someone high up in the police department. They were owned by insiders who could get things done. Oh, and here's a little tip. If your U.S. driver's license expires and you're in need of a current one, any kind of current one, not just a U.S. one, there are some workarounds. And remember, if you're living in Latin America or anywhere outside the U.S. and your driver's license expires, in most U.S. states these days, you can't just pop back and get it renewed. You have to show that you live there. States are getting tougher and tougher about that. So anyway, as mentioned, if you've got your plan B going, you're living in Latin America, and you don't plan on going back and living in the States just to renew that driver's license, it's a problem. And that usually means, you know, if you don't have a property there with your name on the title or a rental contract or utility bill with your name on it, that is, you can't provide proof you're living somewhere in the States, then you'll have to use a relative's house or domicile. But for a lot of gringos and expats who don't want to go back to the U.S., that's not possible. And as mentioned, if you don't have permanent residency in a Latin American country, you can't go down to the driver's testing station and get a local license. But if you ask around by hook and crook, you can almost always find someone that could get you a license for $100 or so. Of course, they're not exactly legal. And though they might have actually come from the driver's license bureau by hook and crook, they're normally not registered in the system. I've seen a lot of those gray market driver's licenses, and some of them are absolutely perfect in every way. The problem is, of course, they've got a magnetic strip and or a QR code on them that can be scanned. So if you get pulled over by a cop or get in an accident and they scan your license, well, you better have your lawyer on speed dial. I guess I'm showing my age. Everything's speed dial these days, right? Now remember, what we're discussing here is for informational purposes only. Once again, let me remind you what this show is all about, living, playing, working, and or doing business in Latin America. I'm just giving you the lowdown on what some gringos and expats do to get by, since, you know, rules and regs down here are flexible, and the bureaucracy sometimes absolutely mind-blowing. Often, corners will be cut, shortcuts will be taken. Anyway, lately, I had the opportunity to check out one of those licenses. A gringo expat friend of mine, who was exactly in that boat, his U.S. license expired a couple of years ago, and he knew the clock was ticking. He knew if he got stopped eventually, some astute cop would call him out on it. especially since his license was getting pretty ratty and long in the tooth. So he picked up one of those gray market licenses. And amazingly enough, when he and I were in a Walmart, he said, "Johnny, have a look at this." We walked up to a scanner. You know, you see him once in a while posted in various aisles. He took out his freshly minted gray market driver's license, scanned the QR code, and guess what? His photo came up and a list of all the right dads. Super professional. Everything looked just right. So obviously, the guys making up those things are up with the latest tech. It was a bit of a shocker to me to see it actually scanned correctly. I thought, hey, no way. But I was wrong again. Now, that means on a routine traffic stop, it will absolutely pass muster. But if it's a car accident, someone gets hurt, and the insurance company's pulled in, there's a chance, especially if someone's hurt, that the cops and the insurance company will do a deeper dive. That means your first phone call should definitely be to your lawyer. By the way, after speaking to a noted Latin lawyer about this very issue, again, just to gather information and cover all the bases, I discovered, and just recently too, that, for example, if you have a decent gray market license from one particular Latin country, let's say from Colombia, that means you'll always be at some risk driving around in Colombia with that license, getting pulled over, getting in an accident or whatever, that they'll do a deep dive and find out it's not real. But I was told by a Latin lawyer who can do a deep dive himself on such things, that Colombian license will be good as gold in any other Latin country. In other words, you could drive on it in Mexico, Panama, Brazil, even in Europe, or the US and Canada, and it will pass muster, as long as that QR code will scan correctly. In other words, if you're driving on a good gray market license in a country it wasn't issued in, if you get in an accident or are pulled over on a routine traffic stop, you get stopped for speeding or another moving violation, they'll write you up for a ticket, but they'll never be able to access another country's official licensing and transit database. Again, I'm not recommending anyone try this. I'm just telling you what lots of gringos and expats do when their American or Canadian or European driver's license expires and they don't go back to their home country to get it renewed. But as that Latin lawyer pointed out, beware. There are tons of older gray market licenses out there with QR codes that don't scan. So then you might ask, what's that got to do with me driving around the other day in a big Latin American city, coming up on a police transit stop, a blockade? And why would that, of all things, make me feel warm and fuzzy? Because, you see, for the first time in all the years I've been down here, I saw the lard-ass traffic cops providing a real service to humanity. As I crept closer, you know, there is a big bottleneck for a couple of blocks, you see, when there's a cop stop like that. I saw right next to those six or so cops that were pulling over traffic, a big 40-foot flatbed truck with police insignias on it, with 10 or so motorcycles chained to that flatbed. And as I got even closer, I saw two cops throw another bike up there. For a minute, I thought, what's going on here? This can't be right. They're actually stopping motorcyclists, checking their licenses and plates, and actually doing something about it? Enforcing the law for once? They were really and truly impounding bikes of idiot drivers who were in violation of, well, practically everything, right? Let's face it, you longtime listeners have heard me say over and over again, 50% of the motorcycle drivers don't even have driver's licenses at all. So I don't know if it's the fact that maybe they hired a couple of new people in the transit department that have IQs over 50, or maybe it's some other political game plan. I don't know, but I like it. In fact, I liked it so much I rolled my window down and gave the cops a high five as I was rolling past. Now, you might ask, how could the cops even manage to pull over a motorcyclist when normally they just whip right on by or take another route when they see the cops putting up a roadblock? After all, motorcycles will run red lights and have three or four people on a bike. They'll do it right in front of a cop, and the cop will never chase them down. So, in this case, how did they even get those bikes to stop? Well, it was because in this case, they had about six cops spread out across the road and some of those orange pylons, so the bottleneck kind of clogged everybody up at that point, and there was no room to wiggle out. Anyway, being that motorcyclists are on our top 10 list of scourges, at least for us gringos and expats, I have to say, for the first time, I was seeing real progress. It was definitely a holy shit moment. Of course, this is Latin America, so it all could have been a mistake. And tomorrow we'll be back to business as usual, but one could always have hope. You might even start believing in karma. By the way, how are you with karma? As for me, sometimes I believe in it, sometimes I don't. Though I gotta tell you, every time I see one of those gold-tooth, mental midget rappers or reggaetoneros bragging in the media about their million-dollar cars, mansions, and hoes, sometimes it makes me think we're stuck inside of a twisted video game with psychopathic advanced alien teenagers at the joysticks. How else can you make sense out of all this? But that's just me. By the way, here's something I forgot to bring up on the last show, but here it is today. You know, I've been talking a lot over the years about stem cells. I've had them myself, so have my family members, friends, lots of people I know, and most of us, a very big percentage of us, have had great results. Anyway, ever since this COVID-iot thing, it's made quite a few people wonder, and I'm getting emails on this, if when you get those stem cells, are you getting them from a vaxxed person or a non-vaxxed person? It's something to consider, right? I mean, who wants that spike protein injected into them at any time? Then again, woke people want as many jabs as they can get, right? In fact, I'm all for jabbing wokesters myself. Then we could just let Darwinism kick in. I bet a lot of you listeners feel exactly the same way. Though the current knowledge is, and you probably heard this before, if you're around people who've been vaxxed, they're shedding and spreading it to you anyway. So if you've been actively avoiding those synthesized spike proteins, you don't want to be around vaxxed people. But they're everywhere, so there's almost nothing you can do about it. Meanwhile, practically all the people you know and love are vaxxed, and all the strangers you're stuck next to in lines and in elevators, too. And if you check out the scientific articles, the white papers, you'll find out those people are shedding all over the place. So, basically, every non-vaxxed person's at risk as long as they're around other people. But still, why compound that problem? So, the thing is, if you're going to get stem cells, you should tell them ahead of time. At the clinic, you want your stem cells derived from a non-vaxxed person. If the clinic can't promise that, you might want to look elsewhere. However, if you've been vaxxed already, I guess it doesn't matter. The good news is that I talked to the director of the stem cell clinic in the DR just yesterday. And she told me that very point has been brought up a number of times in the past. And of course, upon your request, they'll derive the cells from a non-vaxxed person. Now, you might wonder, how do they do that? How do they determine that? Of course, you could take the person's word for it, but some might be lying. Though there is a more definite, scientifically provable way. All they have to do is check for antibodies to COVID in the blood of the donor. If there's no antibodies, that person's never been vaxxed, nor has that person ever had COVID. Because the only way antibodies will show up is if you've had a vax or COVID already. Now, you might wonder, how easy or difficult is it to find someone who's not been vaxxed and not had COVID either? They're out there, all right. I've run into quite a few myself. In fact, yesterday, I was talking to a couple of longtime expats sitting in a coffee shop. A couple of unwoke geezers. One of them, a 70-something ex-FBI guy who got the hell out of Dodge because he saw, better than you or I ever would, how absolutely screwed up the system is from the inside. And this guy, plus another guy sitting there too, reported they'd neither been vaxxed nor had COVID. The only caveat to that is, you know, you could get COVID and not know it. So, who knows? They can only assume they've never had it, but they've never had their blood checked. Now, if you think about it, though, it's probably okay to have stem cells from someone who's had COVID. Then they've developed a natural immunity. After all, stem cell donors are teenage and adult women who've had children, right? That means they're loaded with antibodies from all the childhood diseases they've had, like measles, mumps, all the variations of regular flu. Like you and I, they're just loaded with all kinds of antibodies from diseases and infections they've had in the past. So if they have COVID antibodies because they picked up the strain, but were never vaxxed, that should be all right. At least it was a result of a natural process. But I definitely agree that wherever you go for your stem cells, you should insist on having a donor that wasn't vaxxed. And if they can't guarantee that, well, either go for it or shop around. Now, again, just to repeat, the stem cell clinic I recommend in the DR, they can guarantee your treatment comes from a donor that hasn't been vaxxed. Just make that clear when you set up your appointments. Or not, your choice. All right, let's take an email talking about Plan Bs from Mr. Robin. Should you or shouldn't you get the hell out of Dodge and have a Plan B? He's one of those guys who knows the Titanic is sinking, but he prefers to stay in the U.S. and take his chances. That's always an option. He says, Johnny, I've been listening to your show for at least a year and a half now. And even though I'm not a Plan Ber in Latin America, I did launch my own Plan B exit plan out of Dodge to Europe. That was a while back, just before September 11th, 2001. He says, I was a lifelong New Yorker then, who made his decision to get the hell out of Dodge after taking the overall temperature of not just New York City, but of the U.S. as a whole. The political, social, and economic temperature, etc. It was not looking good to me. I didn't know or care if I ever would return to the States. As it turned out, I did return several years later in order to capitalize on a project I was working on. Then he says, as far as Europe's concerned, good luck trying to make money on a creative project in a satisfied social economy where all things creative are considered hobbies. He says, as I look back on the shape of Europe now, I consider my return to the States entirely justified. Europe is just a rehearsal space for what's coming to a government near you. Besides, it's harder to pull some of the fascist tricks here in the States because a good slice of the U.S. population, quote, got guns, with no sign of that ever slowing down. But make no mistake, all that chaos is coming soon and it needs to be stopped. Even though I may go down with the ship, the U.S. ship, I'll go down swinging. Anyway, Johnny, enough about me. I find your advice to be salient and your views hilariously educational. Keep up the stellar work and thanks for your sharing heart. All right, thanks for that, Robin. You know, I never was very good at accepting compliments, but when you say thanks for your sharing heart, come to think of it, I do give away a lot of free stuff, don't I? That's why, after doing this show for the last 12 years, I have a reason to feel pretty good about it. That is, I feel good about the fact that I'm not in it to make money, gouge people, or even sell anything at all, basically. Although in the past, occasionally, just occasionally, I've had a few people tell me, email me, that they wanted to come to one of my seminars, but they thought it was too expensive. But you know what? That comment has never, ever come from anyone who's actually taken the seminar. In fact, I've heard scores of people tell me after just hearing the legal part of the seminar, that's one day out of six, they'll tell me if I left right now, I got more than my money's worth. By the way, for any of you guys and gals out there who think I have to do this show and do seminars to make a living, to make ends meet, you're 100% wrong. In fact, if you're ever down here and meet up with some of my friends, my gringo expat friends, the people I recommend, the physicians, lawyers, dentists, Captain Mango, Oscar Miner, Bitcoin Dan, Mr. B, any of the expat seminar guys and gals who end up living down here, ask them if I need to do this show or the seminar. They'll set you straight. They'll probably laugh, too. The thing is, you know, and I've said this a million times, once you get down here, you're going to have lots and lots of time on your hands. I mean, hell. Just think if you're up in the States or Canada, wherever, right now, and you had a full-time cleaning lady, how much time you'd have on your hands. Well, guess what? If you're above average at all and have any kind of creative thinking going, you'll start developing those hobbies you never had a chance to do before, and you'll start tinkering with things. That is, if you're good with your hands or you like working with your hands. If you're above average, and everyone listening to this show certainly is, you've got some projects or ideas on the back burner of your mind that you just haven't got around to because you never had the time. Though you certainly will once you get that plan B rolling. Now, some people who come down don't have any big projects or plans, not right off the bat. In that case, maybe you're a good organizer and you like to give the local kids, the poor kids, a leg up. As for me, doing this show and having the occasional seminar are ways I fill my empty blocks of time. For some expats, you know, it's painting or writing the great un-American novel, or whining and complaining or getting political on the internet. For some, it's watching Netflix and drinking a case of beer a day. To each his own, right? The thing is, though, there'll eventually come a time when you hit 50 or 60, when you say to yourself, what am I here for? What have I accomplished? It'd be nice to go out accomplishing more or giving more than what you took. Otherwise, the whole ride wasn't much worth it then, was it? Then again, every other person you pass on the street's below average. So half the world just plods through life never even thinking about it. Most of them check out thinking their measure of success is how many toys they've accumulated. But somehow when I hear people say you can't take it with you, I recall that guy a few years ago, you probably remember him, who wasn't buried in a casket, he was buried in the driver's seat of his Cadillac. No need to tell you what his priorities were. You gotta wonder, millennia from now when humans are dead and gone and aliens land on the planet and their archaeologists unearth some of our graves. You know, like we do with Egyptian mummies. They'll judge us, of course, by what they find. Dental implants and bridges, contact lenses, artificial knee, hip, and shoulder joints, synthetic hair weaves, pacemakers, heart stents, gastric balloons, silicone boobs and butts, Nike shoes, etc., etc. In 10,000 years, that's all that will remain. Along with a lot of uneaten Wonder Bread Twinkies and Happy Meals, too. I bet those aliens just scratch their heads. They probably got two or three heads. And they'll be thinking, those crazy humans, what were they thinking? All right, now, this just in, more news about loan sharking in Latin America. Yep, that's right, loan sharking is huge here in Latin America. In fact, I personally know two loan sharks myself. No, I've never done business with them. I just happened to meet them through other friends. First, let me point out that the lag time you see in Latin America is not the same, not universal in every Latin American country. Turns out, Mexico has the least lag time, which is obvious because they have a border with the U.S. and there are thousands of people going back and forth every day. So fads, new technology and developments that may take 10, 15, or 20 years to get to Honduras or Guatemala might land in Mexico in 5. For example, hybrid and electric cars. They made it to Mexico years before they hit the countries south of the border. Anyway, now let's hit the subject of loan sharking and extortion here in Latin America and how, in Mexico, new types of extortion methods are popping up all the time. Turns out loan sharking and extortion go hand in hand. Just like people say every new fashion and trend that takes hold in the States starts first in California, whether good or bad. In Latin America, it happens in Mexico first, so Mexico's Latin America's version of California. Take, for example, the recent news about the latest extortion and loan sharking schemes in Mexico. The title of this article is Express Extortion: How Easy Smartphone Credit Apps Extort Money Out of Millions of Unsuspecting Mexicans. Yep, that's right. Thieves, no-goodniks, and gangsters in Mexico have found out you don't have to own a business or a store to be a victim of extortion. All you need is a smartphone. It's all made possible since Mexicans and practically every other Latin American will give up their personal debts on their phones to practically anyone who offers them a Happy Meal. Let me paraphrase this article and you'll see how this newest scam works. And I'll try to translate. It says, scammers in Mexico have yet again evolved their modus operandi by using express smartphone, no background check, quick cash loan apps. And the purpose of these apps? To extort users and drain their bank accounts. It says, according to a recent investigation by Publimetro, a raft of unlicensed credit apps have been appearing, offering immediate loans at high interest rates. These cell phone apps have become extremely popular in Mexico. They've taken off just in the past year. Since most people live paycheck to paycheck, Mexicans are used to taking payday loans and quick cash loans at very high interests from neighborhood loan sharks. And suddenly, a rash of loan apps have appeared that do not require any documentation to be submitted by the user, no background history, no credit check. That is, no proof of work, references, or bank statements. And the transfer loan money is transferred in less than 24 hours. Sounds too good to be true, right? Well, it is. What makes these loans so appealing is they offer rates much less than the neighborhood loan sharks, who normally charge up to 50% a month. However, it says, in signing up for such loans, users are exposing themselves and their families to real dangers. Most of these apps, it says, are part of a well-coordinated extortion scheme known as Monta Deudas, mounting of debt, which ramp up the pressure on customers to make them pay up. There are two problems here. First, in order to sign up for the app, users must allow it to access their photo gallery and all their friends and contacts, which the Mexican loan applicants are glad to supply. The teaser is, for the first few months, they offer a very low interest rate. Then, as the small print bears out, monthly interest fees ramp up rapidly to exorbitant amounts with little to no warning. In some cases, users are charged as much as 5 times the value of their original loan per month. And when users can't pay, the owners of the app use the access they've gained to their personal details and their friends and relatives to issue threats. It works like this. If you're behind, the contacts gleaned from your user's phone will receive phone calls or WhatsApp messages telling them the user must pay up or they'll take over their social media accounts, often threatening even personal harm. Worse yet, these loan shark app companies collect personal materials gained from cell phones and publish them online and share them with each other. Many delinquent users have reported receiving phone calls where the person on the other end will say, quote, if you don't pay up by midnight tonight, one of your relatives will be dismembered. Then how often does this stuff happen? Well, according to Mexico's National Commission for the Protection of Financial Service Users, the Comisión Nacional para Protección de Defensa de los Usuarios Servicios Financieros, that long and ridiculously stupid name going by the acronym, CONDUCEF. Really, what a mouthful. But that's what you'd expect from pompous, bureaucratic, useless, lard-ass government turds, huh? And of course, that's meant in the kindest, most Christian sort of way. Anyway, as of last month, September 2022, 33,000 people have reported that they have fallen victim to the scam. Meanwhile, a government official from that financial investigation group, who wishes to remain anonymous, believes that less than 10% of victims will call in a complaint. So he believes more than 500,000 Mexicans have been scammed already this year. It makes sense, too, since more than 130 of such quick cash apps have popped up in the country in the last year. with hundreds of new customers jumping on board every day because they bait them by advertising on social media and claiming that no credit history is needed. Just hand over yours and your friends' data. By the way, the situation has become so severe that Mexico's president commented at his daily press conference on July 5th, warning against using the apps, claiming we can say the so-called Montaduda's smartphone apps are definitely part of organized crime. You think? I mean, really, when's the last time your bank, if you were behind on your payments, threatened to dismember your friends and family? Though, I guess all of us have a family member or two we wouldn't mind seeing that happen to. The problem is you can't pick them. They will. Then the article says, it's amazing and alarming the amount of personal information clients are willing to give up on such loan apps they know nothing about. They think they're legit because the apps are nicely designed and appear like every other app. Then it says these loan shark apps are popping up in two other Latin American countries, Colombia and Brazil. In fact, it said in Brazil, it's led to a spike in express kidnappings of family members in the city of Sao Paulo. It says, according to Brazil police, criminals are migrating to express kidnappings via these apps when they realize large amounts of money they could be collecting in short periods, thanks to the personal data clients are willing to give up so easily. In fact, it says in Brazil, it's gotten so bad the country's central bank was forced to set transfer limits and a minimum wait time for transfers on the payment platforms on apps, all in an effort to discourage the explosion of express kidnappings. All right, so there we have another piece of information regarding Brazil, that there's an explosion in express kidnappings. That'd be reason number 427 why I don't recommend Brazil as a viable plan B for expats. Nice place to visit, certain places, but I wouldn't want to live there. One of the only places I'd consider is a place called Florianopolis. It is sort of a neutral island of tranquility, very nice, scenic, inexpensive, but forget about Walmart, Costco, and Amazon. And as for me, since I don't speak Portuguese, it's out of the question for me as a plan C. Yeah, you heard me right, plan C. Once you've got your plan B going, it's not a bad idea to have a plan C. Just in case that plan B goes south. Who knows, any country could be hit by earthquakes, hurricanes, civil unrest, economic implosion, currency controls, creeping or even galloping socialism. Why not have a plan C? I mean, look, you got more than two pair of shoes and two pair of underwear in your closet, right? I hope.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.